Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Celebrate our God-given freedom and faith while honoring our Blessed Mother with Ghirelli's USA Rosary. Each state is represented on this rosary's 50 beads. Red, white, and blue enamel adorn its patriotic crucifix. Get yours today. Shop www.ghirelli.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Hello and welcome to Real Living. This is Lavinia Spirito with Mary Lou Nemecek, and today we're going to continue our introduction of the book of the prophet Isaiah. This is going to be an ongoing series. We may interrupt it from time to time with perhaps more timely topics of the day, but we would like to kind of delve a little bit into the major significance of this first of the major prophets, Isaiah.
Reason being is that you will offer this study this fall at Christ the King at the Catholic Way Bible Study for the first semester.
Right. So kind of dry rehearsal, right?
Yeah, and I'm hoping that everyone that hears these shows will be called to sign up for this, because I can't think of a more interesting study than this.
Absolutely, and like I said, for those who say, "Oh no, we want 42 lessons of Isaiah." You know, in the end, no, you don't. I mean, I think this will be fine. This will capture the essence. I've kind of picked groups of verses and to kind of maintain themes and all that stuff. But I've cut out a lot of stuff, which really at this point we don't need to get into in terms of curses and judgments and that kind of stuff. So
we're going to go to the meat of it.
And we're going to go to the meat, basically, as it applies in modern day. Of course, you know, woe oracles apply today as well, because the nations are doing, unfortunately, the kinds of things that the pagan nations surrounding Israel were doing at the time, and perhaps even worse, unfortunately. But that is a topic for another day.
Well, human nature being what it is, I think these things don't change.
We said that Isaiah was born probably around the year 700, that he was called in the year 740 BC, and that he died around 678, somewhere in there, BC. He was a court prophet at the court of the king of Judah. He prophesied under four different kings: Uzziah, Jehu, Jehu's son Ahaz, and Ahaz's son Ezekiah. He is eventually martyred under unrighteous king Manasseh. If you know anything about Israel's history, Judah's history, you know that Manasseh was really perhaps one of the most evil kings of the line of David. Really just truly dreadful. We do know that he was actually tradition. There is a document out there called the Martyrdom and Ascension of Isaiah, which is one of those extra-biblical Jewish texts, says that Manasseh listened to false prophets who said that Isaiah was blaspheming, because in Isaiah 6 he had said that he had seen the Lord. So that sounds like a trumped-up charge to me. But what was happening was that the false prophets were feeding a pack of lies to the king, and the king wanted to believe them and did not want to believe what Isaiah was saying, that exile is impending, that, you know, you better get right with God, you better straighten up and fly right, because the writing's on the wall. So, you know, what king wants to hear that? I guess he didn't. And so tradition has that he put Isaiah, the old, elderly Isaiah, at this point he's really old, in a hollowed-out log and had him sawn in half with saws. So that's rather gruesome, but that's referenced actually even in Hebrews, the letter to the Hebrews 11, verse 37, refers to that tradition, to that understanding of what happened to the prophet Isaiah, which means that even if you die really, really old, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to die in your bed. Especially you are presenting the word of God to an unbelieving generation.
Exactly.
Or three or four generations.
Isaiah has, one of the nicest characters of Isaiah is that when God called him, which is addressed in chapter 6, that he certainly accepted it and volunteered. So, and he was anxious for the Lord to send him. So how gracious was that of him when you just describe what happened to him at the end of his life?
That's right. He basically, he stepped forward quite generously. Remember, in the time of Isaiah, so we're talking the 8th century before Christ, okay? So that's a long time mm-hmm. ago. It's a glimpse into a completely different world. You know, men and women are always the same, obviously, but a different culture, a different way of thinking. He was a court prophet. So there was an institution in the court, in the royal courts, whether they were Israel, Judah, or even elsewhere, to have spiritual advisors, court prophets in this case, who would hear the word of the Lord and give it to the king. Except that, unfortunately, as in the case of Jeremiah as well, the court prophet, the court prophets that prospered were the court prophets who said, "Hey, king, you're the man. You're doing everything right. Everything is fine. Everybody's going to prosper. There will be no war. Nobody's going to die. Everything's going to be fine." But in fact, the true prophets like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, etc., are the ones who are saying, no, you all have broken the covenant. You all have taken other gods. You all have you are unrighteous towards the poor. You're guilty of religious ritualism. You're just going through the motions. You have broken the covenant, and judgment will come. And so nobody wants to hear that, unfortunately. But the themes that extend through Isaiah make it known almost as it has been called the fifth gospel, because he has been known actually as the evangelical prophet. I think that's what Jerome called him, because we have an incredible doctrine of who Jesus Christ is going to be in such full detail by a man who died, who was dead and buried almost 800 years.
Years, yeah.
Before Jesus arrived. So I think that was pretty cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he received his calling, as you mentioned, in the year 740, on the year of the death of King Uzziah, who was a leper. So he died a little bit before his time, as a prophet in a vision at the Temple of Jerusalem. And we're going to go back and look at that when we go in the various chapters of Isaiah. Today's show is going to be mostly still an introductory show. But he was charged with proclaiming the downfall of Israel and of Judah in punishment for the unfaithfulness of the people and their failure to repent. Remember that we have examples of prophets like Jonah, for instance, who did preach judgment. But what happened? The people repented.
Right.
And God relented, at least for that generation. You know, later on, God will get the Assyrians good. But because basically the point is, if you hear the message, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. You know, that's one of the main points, right?
Right.
So, you know, and if you're the king, you don't want to hear about the downfall of Israel, right? In mm-hmm. punishment for the unfaithfulness. You think that somehow the people being unfaithful is just the way it should be. It's business as usual. Does that sound, you know, as a king, you may have even codified that it's okay to sacrifice your children to Molech. As a king, you may have even codified that it's fine to have, you know, 500 wives. As a king, you may have even sanctioned the ignoring of the poor. But that does not make those things right. So I think it's easy for a lot of kings to just believe their own, just like it's easy for a lot of governments, modern governments as well, to believe their own press, right? To believe that somehow they are replacing everything that God could do for a nation. So that's pretty scary.
That is pretty scary.
What's important to see, I think, in the balance of the show that I'd like to do, outline for you all out there, and for us as well, the historical horizon. What was going on in the Near East at this time of Isaiah? This is crucial, because unless you know that Israel and Judah were two separate kingdoms, that Israel and Syria had become allied with and were trying to bully Judah, into joining their alliance. Unless you know that Egypt was still a power and was lurking in the background, ready to ally itself with whoever would do their bidding against Assyria. Unless you know that at this point in time, Babylon is still not a power, it's still Assyria, who is the world domination. I mean, these are certain things you just need to know in order to fully understand the book of Isaiah.
That's a neighborhood that's pretty dangerous, in my opinion.
Very dangerous. And, you know, we're talking the Assyrians. We're like the first great world power, mm-hmm. right? So in 738, so that's 2 years before Isaiah is called as a prophet, so still under King Uzziah, Assyria came in quite strongly. It had already conquered Israel, the northern kingdom, in 721. And Judah in the south had become a vassal of Assyria and was about to succumb politically. And this was happening during the reign of the unrighteous king Ahaz. And it's during this time that the prophecy that we know so well as presaging, of course, the arrival of Jesus is given, right? Mm-hmm. But the temptation was during the time of the last king, Hezekiah was very threatened by Syria and Assyria to the north. And so what did he do? What right mind thinking man would do this? But he did. Hezekiah says, oh, you know how I'm going to protect myself against Syria? I'm going to make an alliance with Egypt. So what happened? Even though I'm a vassal of Assyria, who has completely chewed up and spit out my neighbor to the north, Israel, mm-hmm. And even though they're getting ready to take over my whole neighborhood, somehow I'm going to shake my puny fist in front of this behemoth, Assyria, and I'm going to ally with Egypt, with Assyria's main major enemy, Egypt. Because everybody knows that political alliance is going to save you and God won't. That's basically what the king is saying. Even this is a righteous king. Imagine what the other king. But what happened was the Assyrians said, we don't think so. You have bought yourself some time by becoming our vassals. But now that you have allied yourself with Egypt, we're going to come in and we're going to eat your lunch.
Which they did.
And that's what happens. The rest of the book of Isaiah should be, well, the beginning of the book of Isaiah should be understood in the key of Jerusalem, which is under peril of siege and then gets besieged by the Assyrians. And then somehow God miraculously delivers them from King Sennacherib, who was an Assyrian king, right? So that's the first part of the book. But you have to understand the political part, right? So that's where chapter 39 lets off, the last 630, 738, and 39 chapters of Isaiah are historical chapters. They basically detail what happens when Assyria comes knocking on the door of Jerusalem. What happens when, Isaiah says to the king, hang in there, God is going to save us. What happens when the angel of the Lord comes in and kills 185,000 Assyrian troops in one night to deliver Jerusalem? You know, and that kind of thing. So that's where the historical part leaves off. But then the second part of the book of Isaiah is chapter 40 through 66. So we just covered chapters 1 through 39, kind of very just in terms of history. The historical thread that continues in chapter 40 is it's a time in the future. Isaiah sees that Babylon will succeed Assyria and will come in and take over Judah. So the scenario of the second part of the book is almost two centuries into the future when the Jews have already been exiled. And in some cases, they're getting ready to return. And maybe in some of the prophecies, they've already have returned to Jerusalem. So it's a big time span, which is why a lot of people have said, modern commentators, Protestants specifically, that somehow there's no way that Isaiah the prophet in the 8th century could have really known that Babylon was going to come in, that they were going to be exiled, that there was going to be a king named Cyrus, king of Persia, that was going to set them free. How could they have known? It's the same thing when they criticize the book of Luke for saying, how could Jesus have known that Jerusalem was going to be besieged. You know, that
that's
kind of
why
thing.
They're saying that there were different authors for that from 40 on.
Therefore, okay. They're saying that, oh, no, there must have been at least another guy, excuse me, who took on the name of Isaiah and wrote at least the middle part. And maybe there was another guy after that, you know.
Or his disciples or something.
You get into these theories, right? But, I mean, the main point is, and we can discuss it maybe in another show, but the main point is that for as much as long as the history of the scriptures has been around, the book of Isaiah has always been understood as one single book. At no point was it ever understood as three separate books. The main reason that they're using is this change in historical perspective. And then the other reason is they're saying, well, come on, there's no such thing as prophecy. So it's really weird because Isaiah in his book is saying, look, the only God who can predict the future is Yahweh. And so therefore stick with Yahweh. The other gods cannot predict the future. But what these modern critics are saying is, look, not even Yahweh can give a prediction of the future. So basically they're contradicting
themselves,
what Isaiah says in the scripture, which again, but I mean, I would expect no less from certain kinds of scholarship, which basically have stopped believing in the supernatural and in the miraculous and in the fact that God can give gifts and can give visions and can give information to people for the building up of his people or for the warning of his people. Even in our day, you and I, Mary Lou, have seen with the gifts of the Spirit how God will speak to individuals things that they couldn't possibly have known.
Absolutely.
So to me, having seen people operate in words of knowledge and prophetic insight,
why do people always try to limit God? God is bigger than any of us. I mean, it's like putting him in a box. There's, you know, nothing is impossible for God. We have to question everything, discern, etc. But come on.
Yeah. That's the main. And really, different parts of the book were written at different times over the 50 odd years. So it's probably no surprise that they probably have a different tone. And perhaps even a different topic, because the topics that applied before in chapters 1 through 37 no longer apply in chapters 40 through whatever, because depending on what God sees, you know, what God sends to Isaiah as a vision. So the second part of the book of Isaiah, we can call it chapter 40 through 55, and it's the book of consolation. So remember, the first one is about judgment. The second part is about consolation. And then the third part of the book, if you can separate it out, 56 through 66 chapters, it contains what we could call as a book of future, the book of the future consolation, the book of future comfort. This is what the exiles will do when they return to into the promised land, right? So, you know, that's what I think we need to keep in mind. We need to be, go ahead.
You're going to cover all the chapters, some more in detail than others, because you know, you don't want to get caught up in details and things that you know, you're going to cover things that you want people to remember, to take away, the themes, the messages.
We will cover some detail. You know, there are certain things that need to be in, but we're not going to do like every single verse. And maybe even not every single chapter, because just certain chapters lend themselves to being cut out because of the fact that they all say the same thing over and over and over and over again, right? So one of the main words that he uses in the Hebrew, there's a word S-H-U-V, which would be a phonetic spelling of the verb return, turn to me, turn back to God, shuv, shuv, shuv. That's a very big theme in the book of Isaiah. Return to me, turn away from sin. The main problem is, will Judah remain faithful? No. Will there be idolatry? Yes. Will there be unjust dealing with widows and orphans and cheating and waiting scales in commerce? Yes. Will there be empty religious ritualism? Yes. So because of these things, most of the people are unfaithful. And because the problem is covenant-shaped, so is the remedy. If you remember, what was the covenant with Abraham? Remember, he said, I will give you a land, I will give you a king, and you will be blessed, right? Through all the nations. So what does God do? He takes away the land, by sending the people in exile. Then he takes away the kings, the leaders. Remember, he promised the kingdom. And then he promised again to David in Samuel 7, 13 and 14. And instead, what happens? The leaders themselves are led away in chains during the exile. And then finally, God, because the breach was of the covenant, the remedy is covenant-shaped. The third aspect of God's judgment is he will make Israel and Judah a curse and not a blessing for the nations. But in the end, of course, as we know, especially if you've read Jeremiah 31:31, God will promise a new and better covenant to replace the broken one. So all is not lost. I think that's important to know. I mean, there's no point thinking, you know, getting depressed by reading this, guys. Although it is very important to know that actions have consequences. Okay, it's during this time, especially during the time of Isaiah, when there's political, military, economic, and social upheaval such had never been seen before. Think about it. From the year 700, the year of Isaiah's birth, through 678 or whatever, the year of his birth, there has been one main kingdom, Assyria, then another successor kingdom, Babylon. The next period of time covered 150 plus years in the future is a third kingdom that comes in, the kingdom of Persia. And all these, this succession of world powers was huge for the people who were under their domination. You might imagine what that must have been. So there must have been nations across the Middle East, according to the prevailing invading power, and also, of course, the resulting syncretism and worship and the turmoil, the social, I mean, it's just a mess. You know, but I think that one of the best ways to understand the book of Isaiah is through the historical background. And that's why we're going to hit it some more during our next show. Thank you for joining us.
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bach with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.